This is the TriDot Podcast. TriDot uses your training data and genetic profile combined with predictive analytics and artificial intelligence to optimize your training, giving you better results in less time with fewer injuries. Our podcast is here to educate, inspire, and entertain. We'll talk all things triathlon with expert coaches and special guests. Join the conversation and let's improve together.
New show today, and today will be invaluable in helping you make the most of a very, very important training session. We're talking about race rehearsals. You only get two of these each race prep phase, and making the most of them will help you enter race day with a plan ready to rock and roll. Joining us for this conversation is pro triathlete and coach Elizabeth James. Elizabeth is a USAT Level 2 and Ironman U certified coach who quickly rose through the triathlon ranks using TriDot, from a beginner to top age grouper to a professional triathlete. She's a Kona and Boston Marathon qualifier who has coached triathletes with TriDot since 2014. Elizabeth, thanks for joining us.
Well, I cannot wait to talk about race rehearsals. I know that our listeners can't see it, but I'm wearing my sweatshirt that says race season is my favorite season. So if we're talking about race rehearsals, that means we're approaching race day and race season.
Next up is Coach John Mayfield. John is a USAT Level 2 and Ironman U certified coach who leads TriDot's Athlete Services, Ambassador, and Coaching programs. He has coached hundreds of athletes ranging from first-timers to Kona qualifiers and professional triathletes. John has been using TriDot since 2010 and coaching with TriDot since 2012. What's up, John?
Hey. Yeah, I don't always get excited about topics, but for some reason, race rehearsals is one of those that I do.
Really?
I don't know why. It didn't really make sense, but yeah, it's one of those kind of like issues that are not issues, but topics that I love to talk through, and I love race rehearsals. And as a coach, I love working with athletes through their race rehearsals. So yeah, excited for today's topic.
I love when the race rehearsal is over and you go get a smoothie afterwards.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah, that's my favorite part of the race rehearsal. I'm Andrew, the average triathlete, voice of the people and captain of the middle of the pack. As always, we'll roll through our warm-up question, settle into our main set conversation, and then wind things down with our cool down. Lots of good stuff. Let's get to it.
Time to warm up. Let's get moving.
One of our TriDot ambassadors, Kevin from Calgary, Alberta, Canada, recently posted a fun picture of a toy T-Rex attached to the back of his tri-bike, and he said, "This is Rex. Rex has been in over 30 triathlons, including Ironman Canada and the Age Group Worlds. He's logged over 50,000 kilometers on the bike, and he always gets lots of compliments when we're out riding. Does anyone else train and race with a partner?" So today, as we talk about race rehearsals, Elizabeth, John, if you were going to attach a mascot or a partner to your bike to tag along with you on race day, what would it be and why? Our current example is a T-Rex from Kevin from Calgary. Elizabeth, what would it be for you?
I would say my mascot would be a lion. So female lions are the hunters, and since I'm a slower swimmer, I'm always kind of hunting while I'm out on the bike, looking for opportunities to better my race position headed into the run. So I'm going to go with a lion as my mascot.
Do you currently have like a toy or plush lion of sorts, or would you?
I definitely don't. This was just on the spot. What am I going to say to answer Andrew's warm-up question? So, but maybe a sticker of a lion.
The lightest form of a lion mascot possible.
Yes.
Yeah. The sticker version, the most aero. Okay.
All right. So I'll start looking for a lion sticker.
Yeah, we can get behind that. I can get with that. John Mayfield, what would you put on your bike?
So that was a quality answer. Like I wasn't thinking there of like. So Kevin's story actually reminds me of, this is totally off topic and doesn't answer the question, but, his T-Rex, years ago. So prior to working for TriDot, I was a banker. I had a career in banking, and, this was like way back in one of my first banking jobs. I came back from lunch one day and this is way back in the day before flat panel, computer monitors. This is back when we had the massive tube thing. There was a toy dinosaur, kind of like the one he has on his bike, on top of my monitor, and it had a pin like down in his mouth. I have no idea where it came from, But that dinosaur stayed with me for a couple years while I was at that bank. I then moved to another bank. I was there for 10 years, and that little dinosaur was on my desk for my 10 years at that last bank. And currently, that same dinosaur with the same pin stuck down his throat, unfortunately, sad for him, is still on my desk.
You don't say.
Yeah.
Who knew that John Mayfield would get sentimental about a toy dinosaur pin on his desk?
He's been with me for years and years and years now. So yeah, I guess maybe I should take him along and
he deserves it. Yeah.
Yeah. So but yeah. So and I guess my as a triathlete, my bike is kind of my workspace. So maybe that works. So
checks out.
Yeah. Not quite along the same lines as Elizabeth's answer, but that's my T-Rex story.
Yeah. So when I first saw Kevin's post, I thought that's super fun. That's super cute. I would never do that just because I was thinking practically, you know, I wouldn't want something extra on the bike in the wind and I wouldn't want something, you know, added weight to the bike because of it. But then when I started thinking about what I would actually put on the bike, one, where he had his T-Rex positioned, you know, it was right on the back of the bike. Right. So it's already behind your body. So it's out of the wind. It's not
still aero.
Yeah. It's still aero. It's not increasing, you know, the drag at all. And so when I found what object I would do, I started buying in a little bit more to this concept. So I've never talked about this on the podcast. I'm a huge Pixar junkie. I love Pixar movies. I love Disney animation and their movies. In another life, if my dream job would be to, be a producer or be a writer or be an animator, at an animation studio making feature films. My wife and I were in our 30s and we're adults, and we go on opening night to anytime there's a new Pixar movie in theaters, because I nerd out on those. I really love them. And I have on my desk, kind of like you, John, in my workspace, I have this little plastic Toy Story, the aliens from Toy Story. I have a little plastic Toy Story alien, and it's right here in front of me, you know, as we're talking. It's maybe 2.5 inches tall, 2 inches wide. It's not very big. And I was like, okay, so if I position it where Kevin positioned his dinosaur, it's out of the wind. And so then now it comes down to weight. What weight am I adding to my bike? And so I weighed my Toy Story alien, and here's the results, guys. This little plastic Toy Story alien toy weighs 19 grams. And so just to kind of cross-reference that with other things I carry while I'm on the bike, The Science and Sport gels that I use, I have, you know, one in my back pocket per hour I'm going to be on the bike. Those are 70 grams each. My Garmin unit, I have one of the smaller Garmin units. It's the Garmin 130. It weighs 33 grams. My Pedro's tire lever that is in my bike flat repair kit weighs 21 grams. And I don't think twice about carrying any of those items with me on the bike. I could have three of these Toy Story plastic aliens on the bike with me, and it would still weigh less than one of the gels I'm carrying on course. So,
how you actually weighed all of that.
So, am I actually going to put my Toy Story alien behind me on the bike for Ironman Texas, my next race? I'm not sure yet, but I'm quite confident that I could, and I would have no ill benefit from doing so. But that is my pick. That's what I would do if I were going to do
this. So next time we have Jesse Frank, the wind tunnel engineer,
we need to ask him.
Maybe we'll see what the implication of adding a little alien to the back would be on aerodynamics.
I think he would get behind that question. Yeah, he would love to get in a wind tunnel and study that, I'm sure.
And
yeah.
I did not know that about the Pixar stuff. So learn something every time we podcast.
Love those movies. Toy Story 4 forever. It's just great stuff. Hey, we're going to throw this question out to you guys in social media land. Go find us on Facebook, the I Am Trot Facebook group. This question will be there. If you are taking a mascot or a partner or a little buddy out on course with you for your next triathlon race, what would that mascot be? Can't wait to hear your responses.
On to the main set. Going in 3, 2, 1.
A key training session leading up to that big A race is the race rehearsal. These sessions allow us to practice race day pacing, fueling, and equipment weeks before the big day arrives and we are out on course. You get one shot at race day, so having training sessions that allow you to head into race weekend with a race execution plan is invaluable. John, what is a race rehearsal and what makes this such a key session leading up to a race?
So race rehearsals are training sessions that are done typically within the tri-dot training. They're prescribed 2 weeks and 4 weeks out from race day. And the intent of these sessions is to duplicate race day as best you can, and then test everything so that we know we have a well thought out, well vetted plan as we head into race day. So all these other sessions prior, they're all about training, gaining fitness. But to a certain extent, we do a certain amount of testing, even within those sessions, like your nutrition. We want to dial in nutrition, especially on those long sessions. But the race rehearsal is a little unique in that really is the focus of that session, is to test everything so that you head into race day with a plan that you can be confident in, that you know that works. So primarily, we're going to be testing pacing. So we're going to refer to RaceX even throughout here, exactly what wattage, what heart rate, are you riding it? What pace are you running? That's critical to dial that in prior to race day. In addition to pacing, as I mentioned, nutrition is critical. So what is your nutrition protocol? Again, every long session is a great opportunity to dial that in. Your race rehearsal is where you confirm that protocol is going to work for you. So what is your nutrition? How much per hour? All of that. So really testing your nutrition. And then things like gear. What are you going to use on race day? Don't let race day be the first time that you test that out. So what helmet are you gonna wear? Are you switching from a road helmet to an aero helmet? How does it feel? Does it fit?
Is it comfortable? How does it feel for a long time?
Exactly. Yeah. Is it comfortable for 4, 5, 6 hours? What kit are you gonna wear? Is the kit comfortable for all that time? Is there chafing?
Is the chamois in the kit comfortable for that amount of time?
Exactly. where do you need to apply the lubrication? that sort of thing. Or do you need to scrap that and wear a different kit? Everything else. What are you going to put on your bike? Are you changing out your wheels? Do you have race wheels? We want to make sure that the brakes don't rub. Are the brakes wide enough to transition from your training wheels to your racing wheels?
Is the Toy Story alien going to stay on, or did you attach it in a way where it's going to fly off?
Exactly. So that's the kind of questions you want to ask, is what am I going to do on race day, and is it going to work? Is this, you don't want race day to be the first time that you're testing all of this. So that's really kind of the intent and the purpose of these race rehearsal sessions, is to test everything so that you head into race day confident, knowing that your fitness is there, you have your pacing, your nutrition, your gear, all of that is spot on, and you're going to go in and knock out your race.
And I mean, as John mentioned, you know, race rehearsals are these great opportunities to practice everything headed into race day. But what I think sometimes gets overlooked as athletes are testing, you know, their gear, their nutrition, the pacing, is that there's still a lot of great training benefit from these sessions as well.
Yeah, true.
That, I mean, certainly, yes, we're practicing, but these race rehearsal sessions are often some of the longest session durations headed into race day as well. So it's often your longest bike rides. There's going to be both rehearsal and training benefit from it. So you get to practice everything, but then you're still building fitness headed into race day.
Athletes will quickly notice these sessions are bike and run only. Why is that the case if we are trying to rehearse for a swim, bike, and run race? And why is the bike portion of a race rehearsal significantly longer than the run portion?
Yeah. The great questions here. And this is primarily just because of logistics. I mean, goodness, the logistics of the swim can be especially difficult. I mean, being honest, sometimes the logistics of just getting in a single swim session challenge me, you know,
particularly open water,
open water, trying to find the availability. But really, the logistics of doing a swim session prior to your race rehearsal bike and run aren't always great. It's not always feasible. So open water may or may not be available nearby the bike route that you're going to do. So now we're working with a really long day. If you're working on, you know, swimming somewhere and then you have to transport yourself and all of your gear to a different location, it's not as easily set up oftentimes as it would be on race day for you for that smooth transition from one sport to the next. And we need to train the next day. So you're working with a really long day there. And then we have the bike and the run because the next day you're still going to be training. So while there may be some benefit to doing swim, bike, run, you know, all three disciplines for the race rehearsal, it would also come at a cost. And so we really need to consider, what is the value? What is the most that we can get out of this training session and this rehearsal while still not interrupting our build into race day as well? So a lot of the reason that we'll see just the bike and the run is from the logistics, and the swim pacing and nutrition are different, and almost somewhat separate. So you're not going to have nutritional intake on the swim segment. You know, the salt water that you swallow in the ocean swim doesn't count. hopefully, you know, that's very minimal. But the bike pacing and the nutrition are critical because they really set up the run. So the bike rehearsal is going to be near or out the full duration of the bike to see how we can set ourselves up for the best run.
Yeah, I've heard, you know, our founder, CEO, Jeff Buer, I've heard him say before about the swim, you know, that the swim is almost a prelude to the rest of the race, right? It's just a box you tick off. And then from there, it's really all about the bike. And so that's where, mm-hmm. you know, we practice that almost full distance on the bike and, you know, to really get a feel for what that's going to be like and for what running off it is going to be like as well.
So yeah, there are a couple reasons why we do at or near the full bike distances. One, as you mentioned, the bike is critical. Not to understate the swim and the run, but really the bike segment sets up the bike and the run. If you mess up the bike, you mess up the whole race. What we see very common are athletes that overbike and then end up walking the quote, you know, you don't have a run at that point. There is no run. It's a walk. And it's a really long
swim, bike, walk.
Exactly. So if you mess up the bike, you mess up the bike and the run. If you mess up the run, then you've just messed up the run. So we really want to make sure that we get the bike segment right. And as Elizabeth mentioned, the swim is largely separate from that. Another reason, as she mentioned, is we need to do training the next day and the day after. We can do the full distance on the bike and still train thereafter, just because the bike is not as taxing. The training stress is not as high as it were if you were doing the full distance on the run. So you can go and do the full distance on the bike, test everything, and then have that 40 to 60 minute run off the bike, which is still going to be sufficient to test your pacing, your nutrition, your gear, but you're not going to have that huge NTS score of doing a full marathon off the bike. That would sideline you for several days. And if you did the full distance on the bike, full distance on the run, that's really going to impede your ability to train thereafter. And those training sessions, you know, we're within 4 to 5 weeks of race day. Those yeah. are become really critical sessions. So really in that 40 to 60 minute run off the bike, you're going to know at the end of that pretty much how the rest of the run is going to go. If you're dying 40 minutes in, then you made mistakes that need to be worked on. If at 40 to 60 minutes you're feeling good and you feel like you could just keep running for a lot longer, then that's when you know you've done things right.
So what about athletes that view a 70.3 as a race rehearsal for an Ironman, and they try to get, you know, okay, I have an Ironman coming up, so I'm going to put a 70.3 on the schedule 1 month, 2 months, 3 months out, or maybe an athlete that's doing a 70.3 and they put an Olympic on the schedule, you know, a few weeks out. Can these kind of serve as a race rehearsal as well, or is that just totally something different that shouldn't be considered a race rehearsal?
So this is something I view as a very common mistake, and it's one of those things that is almost intuitive or suggested, I would say, simply because oftentimes when we talk Ironman distance racing, we are referring to Ironman races. Ironman loves to host a 70.3 3 to 5 weeks prior to a full. So you would think that going and doing that half distance race would be a great setup for the Ironman race. In reality, I would say that's a mistake. Now, you also mentioned doing one 2, 3, 4 months out. That's going to be different. That actually is a great opportunity to do a half when your training load is similar to what you would experience in that race distance. So when your long session on the bike is somewhere around 56 miles, that's a great opportunity to go race a 70.3 and utilize that training and fitness to
but that doesn't make it a race rehearsal.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think of race rehearsal as like a dress rehearsal for a play. When a cast is doing a dress rehearsal for a play, they don't do just the first act. You know, it doesn't do them any good to rehearse the first act and then leave off the second. And that's really where Iron Man becomes very different. Racing for 112 miles is very different than racing 56. Running a marathon is very different than running a half marathon off the bike. So if that's all you're doing, if that's all you're experiencing, you're not truly setting yourself up. You're not really rehearsing for what you're going to expect. So if your nutrition protocol works for a half, that's a great start. But that doesn't necessarily mean that same protocol is going to continue to work for really better than twice that duration.
That's very true.
So that's why it's great experience. It's great to go see the venue. There's value in that. But these race rehearsals are very important in that we want to truly duplicate those race conditions as best we can. So we really do need to ride 112 miles or 56 miles in these race rehearsals to truly test everything. Same thing like you mentioned, a kit that's comfortable for 56 miles may or may not be comfortable for 112. And you don't want to find that out on race day.
Yeah.
The other implication of doing a half in those last couple of weeks is typically we're going to taper into that race. And then you race a 70.3, you're going to be a couple days down recovering from that race. When we're 3 to 5 weeks out from Ironman, as I mentioned before, every single training session becomes very important. Those are critical sessions. And those sessions are going to be either missed or diminished by that 70.3. So chances are you're going to back off a little bit. Maybe it's not a full taper, but you're going to at least going to back off for probably at least 3 to 5 days headed into that 70.3. And then again, at least 3 to 5 days of recovery afterwards. So effectively that one 70.3 cost you 10 days of a very high value training time.
Yeah.
And what is the benefit of that towards your Ironman? I would argue pretty low. To where it's one of those cost benefit trade-offs. I would say ignore the suggestion that Ironman perhaps is making to race the 70.3 and the full. I would say especially this is even more so for the first timers or those with less Ironman experience. You know, those that have their legacy qualification, they've done it 12 plus times. Chances are they know they've got a better feel for what their protocols that they're testing race after race are pretty well dialed in. It's still important to test because things change. But you know, I would say for those people, they can get away a little bit more so, but I would say especially for those first, second, third time, these are critical sessions that we don't want to compromise.
Yeah. And along those lines, I mean, I haven't done an Ironman yet. I'm at the point where I've done several 70.3s, and each time I do a 70.3, each time I bike that 56 miles and run that 13.1, I like my body gets, it's like I'm more and more used to doing that distance. And a 56 miles on a bike used to sound insane to me. And now it's a very normal distance for me to ride, right? And so when we do those over time, we hit those race distances over time, you know, we adjust to it. So I also want it to be known though, John, that you made, I love the analogy of the dress rehearsal for a play, for a theater performance. And so I want to let it be known, the Mayfield children are fantastic theater performers, and that's their extracurricular activity of choice. And so John, using that analogy, one, is a fantastic analogy for a race rehearsal, but two, is a very sentimental nod towards the Mayfield kids and what they go through in their own theater production. So I see what you did there, John. Nice little flash.
Speaking
nice little
from experience here, yeah.
So most athletes are placing multiple races on their calendar at the start of the year. And those races can take place at very different times in our season. They can be very different in their distances with everything from sprint to Ironman. Talk to us about how the approaching race itself affects what the race rehearsal workout calls for.
Yeah, so, I mean, we've got a variety of distances that we might be racing throughout the year. The sprint and Olympic races are going to be very similar in duration to those weekend brick sessions that we would see on our calendar. So essentially, each weekend session there is an opportunity for a race rehearsal. But they wouldn't necessarily be designated as such until we really get into the 70.3 and full distance. And that's where you're going to see those specific race rehearsal sessions prescribed. But regardless of the distance, you know, whether it's the sprint or the Ironman, what you would do in a race rehearsal doesn't change. It's just the opportunity to really practice your pacing, your nutrition, your gear, and all those things that we mentioned before so that you know what to expect headed into race day.
Some athletes have a variety of options in terms of how they execute a bike training session. You can go out and ride. You can stay in on the trainer. You can simulate your actual course on Ruvi. You can lay into erg mode on Zwift or a similar indoor platform. Tangibly, how are these race rehearsal sessions best executed?
So a best case scenario would be to do it actually on the course. As I mentioned from the beginning, we want to duplicate race conditions as best we can. Understandably, for most people and most courses, that's just not feasible. I live near the Ironman 70.3 Texas course, so for me it is feasible. When I race that, for me it's about a 30 minute drive down to the course. So for me it's worth it to go out, and I can safely go ride that course, and I can experience absolutely zero gain for 56 miles. but down there it's much more about the wind and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Whereas even 30 miles north, I don't experience wind like that. So for me, it's worth it. Elizabeth has even come down from the Dallas area to mm-hmm. to do the same thing, to train on the actual course. And I know that's something that she always does, is if possible, she'll actually go and train on the course prior to race day. So sometimes that's feasible. Sometimes it's not. It's kind of what is your appetite to go?
I can't ride on the Hardy Toll Road in
right.
Houston, Texas.
Yes.
Yeah, on a weekday. Yeah,
yeah. Most of the swim venues are not available. Many of the bike venues are not. I know like Ironman Louisville is one that's a normal weekend ride for a lot of folks. Same thing, Ironman Florida. I know there are groups that go out and ride that course every weekend. So some of them are available, some are not. Some may be a proximity that you can get to, some are not. So best case scenario would be doing it on the actual course, but oftentimes that's not. So again, from there, you want to duplicate conditions as best you can. So there you can do it remote, where you're actually riding outdoors on your normal routes that you're doing, and you can duplicate those conditions that way. So you're riding the time, getting in the distance, and again, same thing. You're testing your nutrition, your gear, making it as close to race day as you can. And then there's the option, as you mentioned, to do it more of a virtual, where it's indoors on a trainer. Maybe it's just on the trainer. Maybe it's using an execution app like Ruvi or Zwift. So really kind of three different scenarios there where you can do it on the course, you can do it more of a remote, or you can do it virtually.
So it's wherever you are, whatever can simulate your race day as best as possible with where you're at. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, John had mentioned, I love going to a course ahead of time, and if I can coordinate it so that my race rehearsals are on the course, then that's kind of an ideal scenario for me. Obviously, when I raced Kona, it was not quite in the budget for me to go to Hawaii multiple times and go train there.
Yeah, it's a shame.
I know. Would have loved that. But that's, I mean, a chance where I had to kind of do things in a virtual environment. And so, I did use an indoor training platform and was able to kind of simulate the course. Certainly, not as much the environment. I didn't have the heater on in the pain cave trying to make it a little bit warmer, but it's still nothing for the Hawaii heat and humidity. But what's so great now, too, is that athletes can use RaceX to export their power plan, to duplicate, those race course like power intensities that they'll be doing on the course on race day. And so
now we're getting into a RaceX feature that I have a very specific question about here shortly.
Okay.
So
let's
save the fireworks.
So hold off. Okay.
And odds
yes.
For about two questions from now.
Okay, deal.
Because now I want to talk a little bit about pacing in these workouts, right? Because they are a little bit different from some of the other workout sessions. The pacing for these workouts is prescribed as race pace. How do we know how to execute these sessions from a pacing perspective? What is, our race pace?
So that's kind of been a question that triathletes have been asking
forever,
for decades. Yeah. And there are some kind of vague philosophical answers of X percent of your FTP type thing, but really it's kind of generic, and inevitably that's going to either be too much or too little, which is toxic on race day. It leads to either going out too hard or leaving time on the table.
Because you don't know if it's too
much
or too little until race day and you find out the hard way.
So we've long said that TriDot takes the guesswork out of training. It tells you exactly what to do to produce your best results. So we look to RaceX to do that same thing. So RaceX takes that guesswork out of racing and provides a specific power plan for each individual athlete according to the course that they're racing. So it's going to take into consideration the terrain, the environment, the athlete's fitness and ability, and prescribe a very specific power plan that is going to produce their best results.
And to expand a little bit more on the race pace, in the race rehearsal, you really want to rehearse the effort that you're going to be using on race day. And the rehearsal may be in a completely different environment than where you will be racing. I mean, we talked earlier, if you can do it on the course, fantastic, but that may not be the case.
Yeah.
And so, you know, your race pace, well, we want to practice, what is that effort going to feel like? So it may be, you know, you're holding 220 watts on race day, but is that realistic in the environment where you're going to be doing that rehearsal?
So even for those that are doing the race rehearsal on the actual course, the environment can change.
Within 4 weeks, especially with some of these races are in fringe shoulder seasons. Mm-hmm. You know, it can be 30 degrees one weekend and 60 the next.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Especially those early season races, late season races where temperature can fluctuate widely. So that's actually one of the really neat features within TriDot or within RaceX is you can adjust for the environment. So as Elizabeth mentioned, a power plan in one condition, one environment may not be appropriate for the same course even in those different conditions. So what we can do is normalize for that environment to where your race rehearsal may be at a higher wattage or a lower wattage, depending on how that environment varies from actual race day, so that when it comes to race day, you'll know exactly how that is going to feel, how your nutrition is going to respond to that as well. So it's duplicating those conditions by accounting for those variances in the conditions as well.
So within race, you know, within RaceX, our pacing plan, it's called our power plan. So what about people that are using heart rate to guide their effort?
Well, there's a couple of different scenarios here. Athletes that are using heart rate for training and racing, and then athletes that may have power for training, but not necessarily for racing. I feel like more and more athletes are training with smart trainers, but may not have a power meter available on their bike. So let's kind of talk about both of those scenarios here. So for athletes that may be using a smart trainer for training and or like an indoor race rehearsal, but they're planning to race by heart rate on race day, well, then they can kind of watch and learn what their heart rate does and use that for guidance on race day. So, you know, as they're following their power plan on their smart trainer, they can be watching how quickly their heart rate elevates on the simulated climbs that they're doing. And then, you know, how quickly is your heart rate coming back down when you get back to a flat section of the course? You know, what is your heart rate doing as you're transitioning from the bike to the run? So there's a lot of things that they can be learning about their heart rate as they're following their power plan on their smart trainer. And, you know, I mean, certainly temperature, dehydration, intensity, anxiety, you know, all of those things are going to impact heart rate a little bit on race day. But at least you've taken the opportunity to learn what your heart rate is doing and how it's responded in those race rehearsals. And it's really giving you the best information available headed into race day to be able to utilize that metric for your best performance there. And that's kind of, you know, the point of these race rehearsals is the preparation for race day. So you're using that information to best prepare you. And then we have another scenario where athletes might be training and racing by heart rate only. And there are specific protocols available for heart rate. So, you know, in the same way that we've been talking about, you know, your power plan, your pacing, they are going to have specific protocols to rehearse with their heart rate. So they're still going to have the same opportunity to practice all of these things headed into race day as well.
So we've started talking a lot about RaceX because RaceX drives our pacing. It drives, you know, how we execute on race day. It drives how we need to execute these race rehearsals. So just in case someone listening is not fully aware of what RaceX is, but they caught the message and they want to be able to truly rehearse their race day pacing, hit us kind of with the highlights of what RaceX is.
Oh, okay. Yes. Gosh, this question makes me excited. There's
go.
So we've already touched on a lot of things that are available to athletes with RaceX. I mean, all of these different tools that they can really utilize to make sure that they can have their best performance on race day. So we've talked a little bit about already, you know, race pacing plans, predictions of, you know, what their swim, bike, and run would be. There's also some great opportunities for athletes to go in and look at some, like, what if analysis. What if I wear my aero helmet? What if I purchase those race wheels? What if I lose 10 pounds before race day? And then all of these tools that they can utilize for their best possible race rehearsal with these pacing protocols. There's a section in RaceX as well for them to, you know, kind of plan out their nutrition and hydration so that as they're practicing, then they can use that same information on race day. So I think one of the things to maybe help relate this to athletes, you know, RaceX is to racing what TriDot is to training. So TriDot optimizes athlete training. RaceX optimizes athlete racing. You're going to get your best performance by utilizing the tools within RaceX. It is a standalone application that is available to all triathletes. So regardless of how you train, I mean, the app is fully integrated with TriDot, but it's not, you know, just for athletes that are using TriDot as well. Regardless of how you train, you can utilize RaceX to get your best possible pacing for your best performance on race day as well. I guess, gosh, this is where, like, I can keep rattling things off, but we've talked a little bit about how it's optimized racing, and there's specific race optimization functionality, not just guidelines. It's very specific that can literally help athletes take 20 to 30 minutes off of their race time. Athletes leave so much time on the course just due to poor pacing. And this really, you know, eliminates that. You are going into race day with a very deliberate, well-vetted plan. And so it's not an experiment. You have exactly what you would need to do for your best possible outcome. I guess, you know, for more information, I'd just say you go back and listen to episode 65. It was amazing to have our founder and CEO, Jeff Buer, just really dive into all of these things that are available with RaceX. So I know I gave some high level highlights,
Like, we don't bring it up today to try to sell people on RaceX. Mm-hmm. To your point, we have episode 65 to really dive into the nuts and bolts of what RaceX is and how it works and why athletes should use it. But when we're talking about race rehearsals, I mean, RaceX is the way to execute a race rehearsal. Mm-hmm. I mean, without utilizing RaceX and the tool that it is, you're just guessing at what your pace should be in a race rehearsal, just like you would be guessing what your pace should be out on the race course. And so RaceX takes care of both. It takes care of guiding your pacing in the race rehearsal, and it takes care of guiding your pacing on race day. So that's where I want to qualify for people. I lobbed that up to Elizabeth because I wanted people to understand what RaceX is, because it is mm-hmm. very much what guides our race rehearsals and our race day pacing itself. So
that was going to be my follow-up comment as well, is that it's not a pacing guideline. And it's also not just a what if. It's going to take your current FTP and prescribe it. So it's not a hypothetical of if you raced at a FTP of this, or a guideline of, you know, it's 80-85% of your FTP. It's very specific, and it's going to, in the optimization, it's going to give you an exact wattage that here for this segment of the course, you need to be holding wattage of X.
Yep. Yep, exactly right. And to that, John, with RaceX, you can actually push your race day power plan to your device and practice the race plan exactly how it will be prescribed on race day Tell me about that feature.
So this kind of goes back to there are different scenarios for how you execute your race rehearsal, kind of those three, whether you're doing it on the course, whether you're doing it remote, or you're doing it virtually. So the file that you actually use on race day is going to be GPS based. So it's going to know exactly where the start of the bike course is. And then based on your exact GPS determined location, that is how it's going to prescribe your power. So in a specific location, you're going to have a specific target power or power to hold for that segment. So then as the elevation changes, that sort of thing, then your power will adjust accordingly. So if you are doing your race rehearsal on the actual course, that's the file that you're going to export. That's going to be your power plan file. If you're doing it remotely, so maybe on your home route, again, you can still duplicate these conditions, but instead of being based on GPS location, it's going to be based on time. So whereas on race day, your first 20 minutes may be on a flat and your optimized power for the flat is a wattage of X, you're going to hold that wattage for the first 20 minutes. Then as you approach say it's a hill that's going to take you 3 minutes to climb, you would increase your wattage to whatever it says for the next 3 minutes. And then as you ride down the hill, your wattage would drop to simulate riding downhill. So for that scenario, you would be riding on a flat the entire time, but you would alter the power. So you would increase the power to replicate going uphill. You would decrease the power to replicate going
downhill. So it's simulating about the time you're going to hit those elevation gains and decreases.
Right. And the reason this works is your body does not perceive changes in elevation. Your body does not necessarily perceive elevation gain. It understands time and intensity. So that is what the body is perceiving when you are climbing a hill. It knows for a certain amount of time that you are increasing the output because you have to overcome gravity. So it requires you to increase your wattage. So that's the same whether you actually are climbing a hill or whether you're riding on a flat. Again, all your body knows is that you've increased the intensity, you've increased output for a certain amount of time. So again, this is how it works and why it works, really regardless of your terrain. And that's the magic of having power is when we're measuring power, it's that objective quantification of your intensity level. So that's kind of how that works. The other option is if you're doing it on a trainer and kind of that same logic applies. Your body does not perceive distance. So again, it perceives time and intensity. So technically on your trainer, you're not going anywhere. The distance you travel is zero. But your body would beg to differ, saying, no, I've been working hard for the last several hours at a certain intensity level, which effectively is the same as traveling over a distance. So you can also export your power plan to apps like Ruvi or Zwift and use those apps to replicate your race conditions. So kind of three different options there. You have the GPS version, you have the time version, or you have those that integrate to those apps. And something else is that you don't necessarily have to export the entire race. If there's a certain portion of the course that you want to train on, then you can export just that portion. This is also something that's great to do in training is maybe there's a particularly difficult section of the course. And maybe that's the one that you want to focus on and really get confident in completing that section of the course. So when race day comes, you know, you've got it down. So, there's options there. So Ken, again, whether you're doing it on the race course, doing it remote, or doing it virtually, there's an export option for your power plan.
In our race rehearsals, if we hold the paces correctly and we execute to our ability, how should we feel after these sessions? I mean, should we just be destroyed because we've rehearsed a race, or should we have gas left in the tank? What are the signs of a job well done?
You're certainly going to be tired, but definitely not destroyed. We don't want you to feel destroyed when you're done. The race rehearsal session is going to be a very similar training load or NTS to the previous week's training. And because of that, you shouldn't feel smashed. I mean, you've built into this race rehearsal session and there's a lot more miles to run on race day. So yeah, we don't want you feeling destroyed at the end. You should feel like you would be able to keep going.
So a job well done on a race rehearsal doesn't necessarily mean that you had a fantastic race, so to speak. The intent of the race rehearsal is to learn, to test, and then be able to refine headed into race day. So a job well done provides information as to how to make adjustments, as to what to change, what to adjust, what to refine, and then head into race day with that confident plan. So especially the first one is really all about testing and finding. The second race rehearsal is making adjustments and making sure that those adjustments are what was needed. So you've had two opportunities as you head into race day with that plan that you are confident and it's well vetted, and it's going to set you up for your best results on race day.
Oh yeah. I mean, I've had some absolutely terrible race rehearsal sessions. I was really proud of my performance in Ironman Texas 2017, but the first race rehearsal that I had for that, I mean, seriously, about everything that could go wrong did. I had major nutrition issues. I took in way too many calories, had bad GI distress, had a mechanical issue on the bike where, you know, later that day I needed to go and replace my cassette. My watch band snapped. I needed to purchase a new watch band. But all of those things happened during the race rehearsal. And then because I was able to kind of discover these things, address them, then come race day, I was able to have a really good performance.
Yeah. And I mean, to your point, that was still a successful race rehearsal. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything went wrong.
Yep.
And it wasn't walking away with a negative feeling. It was like, hey, we learned what we were supposed to learn, mm-hmm. and we were able to adjust it before race day. So successful race rehearsal, even though it was not the workout you wanted.
Right. Yes.
And so we've talked on the podcast before about how race rehearsals are a great chance to test out some nutrition items. They're a great chance to test out some gear items. Elizabeth, we just talked about how you were able to kind of test some things out and then Ironman Texas won and made some adjustments afterwards. And knowing that this is a prime opportunity to test some things and to play with what we want to actually use on race day, what all specifically should we make sure we test in these sessions?
Well, I think the short answer is everything. So, I mean, we're, you know, testing our pacing. You brought up nutrition, and I think that's a big part of this too, that, you know, athletes are testing nutrition throughout the long sessions that they've had leading into these race rehearsals. But the race rehearsal is a really good opportunity with kind of that longest bike ride and a little bit longer run off the bike to see how that nutrition is going to set them up for a very successful race. So, you know, the type of nutrition or nutritions that you're taking in is important. Are you doing solids or liquids? At what point are you maybe switching from solids to liquids? I know for me with my nutrition plan, I go from more of a solid food at the beginning of the bike to more gummies near the end and then gels and then liquid by the end of the race. So mine kind of moves throughout a progression. And I practice that during the race rehearsals to then get myself ready for race day. You know, how much sodium are you taking in? We've talked on a couple different podcasts about electrolyte replacement. So making sure that we have that dialed in, the timing of it. How often are you going to eat? How often are you going to take sodium? And then how are you going to consume that nutrition? Is it going to be from an aero bottle? Are you going to have a back bottle on your bike that you're going to refill that aero bottle from? Are you planning to stop at aid stations? You know, same thing on the run. Are you going to carry something with you? Are you going to have a water bottle? Are you going to have a fuel belt? So all of those things in terms of nutrition as well need to be practiced.
So an additional benefit of this besides the testing is the decision-making process. Especially when we're talking long course racing and really any triathlon, there's so much gear that goes into
yeah.
it. But I think especially, I would say even Ironman is unique in that, I think there's some different gear selections that we tend to make there. Again, as Elizabeth mentioned, there's things like special needs bags and different opportunities that don't exist in other triathlons. So this is a great opportunity to make those decisions and to see what is the gear that I want to use on race day. So I mentioned before testing everything, your kit. Again, is it comfortable? Does it chafe? Where do you need to apply the lube? You want to learn that prior to race day. And then the gear, the wheels, helmets, which shoes are you going to run in? That sort of thing. So it's a great opportunity to make those final decisions. Your last race rehearsal is 2 weeks out from race day. So it's kind of like, you need to know
by then,
in that mm-hmm. time, or is, you know, do you need to replace anything? Maybe it's the aero helmet that you've always worn no longer is comfortable, or maybe it's worn out. Maybe it's time for new shoes. It's kind of late at that point, but it's better to know that on race rehearsal day than on race day. So it really helps in that, make those final decisions. And these are also included in our race ready emails. So this is something we include for all the Ironman races. As you put those on your season planner, you'll receive a weekly countdown email with a lot of these reminders of things of like when to replace your running shoes and that sort of thing. But some of those things are covered in there as well to help. Would help with those decisions and provide some reminders.
Every time I get one of those, I panic a little bit for this next race, Ironman Texas, that I have coming up. It's always an email from John Mayfield, and it always the subject is always 11 weeks from Ironman Texas, 9 weeks from Ironman Texas, and every single time I see that date creep closer, it's exciting and terrifying all at the same time. So thank you, John, for that. I regularly check my email first thing in the morning. And so starting my day off with a jolt of Ironman terror is always great. So thanks for that, John.
Yeah. You're welcome.
So we do the workout. We bike, we run, we get some nutrition and afterwards to recover, and we start to examine how that race rehearsal went. What is the best way to evaluate what worked and what didn't?
So you have that plan beforehand as you go in, and now you want to see how well it worked. So I think some important considerations was, were there any lulls in energy? Did you feel strong throughout, or towards the end were you fading? Kind of as you mentioned, you may need to increase your caloric intake. Did you have any GI issues? You know, did you have cramps or anything like that had issues? Did you have to go to the bathroom excessively? Kind of a thing. So maybe there it's changing the frequency of your nutrition, the amount of your nutrition. Maybe it's the type of nutrition. So hopefully not anything major. That's goes back to the importance of testing throughout your training so that you arrive at your race rehearsal with a good idea of where it is, and then you're confirming that. But if you have those GI issues, those obviously need to be addressed. And that's why we retest in the second race rehearsal, is to confirm that those adjustments are working. Were there any gear issues? And so again, if there were, that's the time to fix it. Were your brakes rubbing on your race wheels? So, maybe it's time to take the bike down to the shop and get your brakes adjusted. Any logistical issues? There's a whole lot that goes into that, especially racing the Ironman distance. There's just a ton of stuff to consider. Was it easy to execute all this? Was it easy to get all your gear together and do this? Because that's going to be very similar to what you're going to experience on race day. So basically, were there any issues? And that's kind of the magic of doing it twice. Even if your first race rehearsal is perfect, you want to make sure that wasn't a fluke. So if everything goes right, we want to confirm that in the second race rehearsal. If there were any issues at all, let's address those, test again. That way, as you head into race day, you've got a solid plan.
So in your own preparations for a race, what is an example of something you learned from a race rehearsal, tweaked for race rehearsal number two, and then had nailed down and time to execute to perfection on race day?
So I feel like I've had a number of race rehearsal learnings, because I've already talked a little bit about
it. Let us learn from you. Yes, let us absorb it.
The Texas one. But another thing, when I started using kind of UCAN gels as part of my nutrition plan for the run, I distinctly remember the first race rehearsal where I practiced using those. And I mean, I, have been using my hair straightener and the little heat vacuum seal packets to package my own little UCAN nutrition. And they don't seal quite as well as, the commercially sealed packets. So I had placed a bunch of these gels like in my fuel belt, and that ended up being an absolute disaster. They did not close as well. They were, exploding all over my kit. It was a sticky, gooey mess of a disaster. I didn't get any nutrition in. So I needed to really kind of...
it became a superstarch soup in the fuel belt.
Oh my gosh. It was disgusting. Let's be honest. So had to experiment a little bit with how to get them to seal a little bit better, and then change the placement of them. I actually put them in my tri shorts pockets so that they didn't just explode all in the fuel belt. Worked perfectly for race day, was able to get my nutrition in, but that was an opportunity to learn. We'll put it that way.
So I've done lots of race rehearsals over the years, and I've had lots of things go wrong, from pacing to nutrition to gear, name it. I've been there. But I think kind of on the other end of that spectrum, ending my season last year with Challenge Daytona, I had two really good race rehearsals headed into to race day where everything came together. My nutrition was good. My pacing was good. I felt good. All the gear worked. And it was almost like I was almost nervous that everything had gone so well. I hoped that I hadn't like just spent all the magic on the race rehearsals but it gave me a really high level of confidence headed into my race. I set a PR, I had a fantastic day. And so I was really able to draw from those race rehearsals and look back and win the worry and concern and doubt that inevitably comes in those last days and hours before race day. I was able to look back and say, you know, I've had two really great race rehearsals. I know
I just got to do it again.
I know my plan is solid. My pacing is there. My nutrition is there. My gear works. So all I had to do was go out and execute. So it was really good to know that and have that very high level of confidence headed into race day. So again, kind of going back to the phrase, sometimes you win, sometimes you learn.
Yeah, no, and a great takeaway for athletes to hear that. Like, yeah, it might go just fine. You might not need to tweak anything mm-hmm. after a race rehearsal. I mean, you might have it down. Everything might have worked. You know, so don't think there's always going to be some nugget you have to tweak after a race rehearsal because you can get it right and then confirm that in race rehearsal number two. I think John did that same training block on that leading up to Challenge Daytona last December. You, me, and Elizabeth, we were in Panama City Beach, Florida, and we all had a race rehearsal on the same day. And so we went out and we rode the same 56-mile course, and then we ran the same, you know, 40-minute course. And you guys were so kind. Y'all are stronger than me on the bike, and y'all waited about 7-8 minutes for me to roll in on the bike. So we started the run together. So in that race rehearsal, we all have a 40-minute off the bike run. We're all training for a 70.3. I've got pro triathlete Elizabeth James in front of me, clocking 6-something, you know, per minute miles, just pulling away from John and I both. I've got John behind me. I'm a stronger runner than John, so I'm in between John and Elizabeth. And on that day, John, I was trying something different with my fueling. And it didn't work. I was drinking my UCAN, but I was trying something else alongside of my UCAN, and I was just under-fueled heading into that run, and I'm dying in the Florida heat and humidity. But my coach, John Mayfield, is behind me, 20, 30 seconds. And so I couldn't look like I was dying because I couldn't show Coach John that things are going poorly on my run. I needed a break, and thankfully we hit a red light, and I hit the little button for the crosswalk.
You're like, oh, yay, thank goodness.
So Elizabeth went through the red light without waiting for the crosswalk because she was just on a roll.
Don't call me out there.
I acted like a good citizen, but I intentionally stopped at the red light and waited. But anyway, that was just a good memory for me. It was kind of fun looking back. But after that, John, the three of us, we went and got smoothies, and we were sitting there, and we were talking about a race rehearsal. We were talking through how those race rehearsals went. You know, John, you were able to ask me, hey, how'd it go? Hey, you know, bike went great. Run, I was dying. And we talked through, okay, well, what did you change nutritionally? This is what I changed. Okay, well, now I'm gonna tweak this. And I went into race rehearsal number two weeks later, back home in Dallas. And I tweaked what I did nutritionally. And that race rehearsal went great and did exactly what you were talking about. It gave me the confidence to go into Challenge Daytona knowing, okay, I learned some lessons in rehearsal number one. I applied the changes to rehearsal number two. Things went great. I felt great on the run. And on race day, I just executed the pacing the same way I did in race rehearsal number two, and it went great. So for both of you as coaches, long story short, you know, that's kind of a tangible example of you know, John kind of coaching me into that race rehearsal number two, into that race for Challenge Daytona. As coaches, when you talk with your athletes before and after race rehearsals, what are those conversations like? What are the things that you're covering with those athletes as you're examining how those race rehearsals went?
I think this is one of the reasons I love race rehearsals so much, is it's a great opportunity to have those conversations with athletes, and you can learn so much along the way. But the conversation is pretty simple. It's pretty basic. It's what went right, what went wrong, what do you keep, and what do you adjust? So it's kind of an evaluation of, you know, you have your list of things, and this was right, this needs to be adjusted, and that's it. So it's pretty simple. It's what went right, what went wrong, and then what do you do about it from there? So there's some great insights, and yeah, there's some great opportunities for feedback, and also some great opportunities to really build confidence and know that your fitness is there and know that you've got a plan to really get the most out of that fitness on race day.
So race day comes, We are actually out there on course in the heat of battle doing our thing. How can we make sure success in our race rehearsals translates to success on the course?
For me, one of the biggest things is just the confidence in the preparation. So whether the race rehearsal was fantastic and you're like, yes, this is exactly, you know, the plan that I have going into race day, or if it was a race rehearsal where you learned some things and you needed to make some adjustments. I mean, either side of the coin there, you were prepared. You did the work, you saw what was working, you adjusted as needed, and that can give you a lot of confidence headed into race day.
So I think a great takeaway is to stick to what you know works for as long as possible. The race rehearsal is going to give you a well-vetted plan, as we've said. But I think the reality of it is it goes back to, I love the Mike Tyson quote, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face. And chances are at some point, Iron Man is going to punch you in the face. And then you need to be flexible. You need to adjust. You have to do what you can with it. So stick to the plan as long as the plan is working. But at some point, if things change, you need to be flexible and adjust, and then just do what you have to do to maximize with what you've got left.
Great set, everyone. Let's cool down.
Even doing the right training right and rocking our race rehearsals, sometimes a quality race day just isn't meant to be. Luis Strydom is a Tridot coach and the founder of Infinitude Coaching based in Pretoria, South Africa, and she has a story about one of those race days where everything that could go wrong just went wrong. But in the end, it led to a pretty cool moment that she will remember forever. Here is Luis with her story.
Hey, Andrew, thank you so much for letting me share the story. A shout out to all my Infinitude athletes that I hope are listening to this podcast. So in 2017, it was my second full Ironman race. Everything went wrong from about 3 weeks before the race. I fell during a training run and tore all the ligaments in my ankle. I didn't know because I could walk on it. So I chatted with Coach Kurt and we made the decision. I'm going to do the swim. I'm going to do the bike, as fast as I possibly can. And then, you know, we'll see how the marathon goes, but it's probably going to be a walk marathon. The morning of the race, I stripped the zipper of my tri-suit, which we needed to fix really quickly. And somewhere in transition, I lost the ankle brace that I'm supposed to run with. Standing on the beach, I only realized I have no idea where I lost it. And then I got really sick in the ocean for the first time since doing triathlons, which was really, really horrible. They actually wanted to pull me out. I said, no, I'm finishing this race. And I knew I yelled at a lifeguard. And there was a few choice words that I'm not going to repeat here. Did the bike, which went really, really well. Also made the rookie mistake of not putting my race belt or my race number in my bike bag instead of my run bag. So there was a little delay in transition. And then off the bike into the run, which I walked. My ankle was throbbing. It was very, very painful, but I'm not going to quit. My husband was next to the road at certain spots, and he was in contact with Coach Kurt, with messages of encouragement. And every time I pass him, he'll just yell at me and say, you know, Coach Kurt tells, you know, go do this, you're doing well, just keep moving, just keep going forward. As the marathon continued, it got darker, there were less athletes around me, from very far in front of me a light came towards me, and I thought, oh well, they're gonna pull me off of this route now. And it was a cameraman wanting to do a TV interview. So of course my first thought was, how does my face look? Do I have any goo marks and stuff around my face? I did the quick TV interview. Obviously I'd have my doubts. It took a lot of determination to just keep on moving, even though my body was screaming to stop. And as I got closer, as I got closer to the finish line, I could start hearing the crowds. I was the last female that needed to come in, although not the last athlete. There were still a few men behind me. So I just decided I am running on this red carpet. There's no way I'm walking. So I just don't know where I got the energy and the power from, but the ankle worked with me, and we got to the finish line, high five by Paul K. And then this woman was just a Red Bull hat was just coming towards me to give me my medal. And you know, eventually I looked up and I'm like, oh, this is Daniela Reed. She's gonna give me my medal. And she just gave me this massive hug. And the whole time I'm thinking, I'm so sweaty and I'm so smelly, and this person is just so famous, and she's hugging me and giving me my medal and telling me that you did such a good job and congratulations, and you know, you had so much determination. I'm so proud of you, and that absolutely just made my race. I can't wait to get back into the game of racing again, hopefully not finishing as the last female. So that's my race story, and never give up. That's the message that I got. You never know who's going to give you your medal.
Well, that's it for today, folks. Big thanks to Louise for sharing her Daniela Reef medal story and encouraging the rest of us to press on to our own finish lines. Thanks to Coach John Mayfield and pro triathlete Elizabeth James for talking to us about race rehearsals. Enjoying the podcast? Have any questions or topics you want to hear us talk about? Head to tridot.com/podcast to submit your question or leave us a story like Luis did for the show. Until next time, happy training.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and share the Tridot podcast with your triathlon crew. For more great tri content and community, connect with us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Ready to optimize your training? Head to tridot.com and start your free trial today. Tri-Dot, the obvious and automatic choice for triathlon training.